The date is August 14th, 2020, and we're still listening to I Used to Like This One, The Lost Pilot. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the sloth to my chunk.
If only I could do a truffle shuffle over audio. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
No, I said I was Chunk. So
I'm the sloth.
Yeah.
Well, people can't see it, but I'm wearing a Superman shirt, just so everybody knows.
And eating a Baby Ruth.
Yes.
So this week we continue our look back at our original Lost Pilot episode, which, if you've stuck with us through the first two parts, God bless you, because obviously you are a true fan to be able to put up with some of the nonsense that came out of that, but it is fun to see how far we've come over this time. So let's get into The Goonies, and we'll be back to talk to you about a few things later.
And then got Mikey flirting hard with his brother's interest with Andy. We've got Mikey flirting hard with her, just totally macking on Andy. And then we get to the bottom of the well, you know, and we've got some major sexual tension between Steph and Mouth at the bottom of the well, where I'm just like, just kiss already.
I found their relationship so awkward.
I couldn't
imagine, like, they have zero chemistry, and the fact that they were, like, set up to be this, like, pseudo relationship is
yeah,
very strange to me. Also, like, she looks so much older than him that it just didn't make any sense to me.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, is it just because Corey Feldman is just such a little guy in this, or is she really that much older? But, you know, I think you dodged a bullet there, Mouth, because, like, she's kind of the worst anyway. But yeah, just like, yeah, the most awkward, weirdest, weird sexual tension between them. And then we've got Mouth's Oscar speech about wishes. This one right here, this is my wish, and it didn't come true, and I'm taking it back. I'm taking them all back. And we and so that's Mouth's big hurrah moment. And so they start
Was that from something? Like, I don't know if I'm just making this up, but I feel like there's something with Mouth and his dad. I don't know why that is coming up to me, but it's just like,
yeah,
I didn't understand his pain.
I like to more, you know, do a little retcon, you know,
yeah,
with Mouth's backstory. You know, I like to think that his dad is probably a functioning alcoholic. His mother left when he was young and went for a pack of cigarettes and never came home or something like that. I'd like to think that Mouth has some sort of troubled past,
in that scene specifically, I couldn't. I mean, it's like he delivers it with a lot of emotion. I will give him that. But I wasn't sure where it was coming from. Like, if he was sad because he thinks he's losing his friends,
he's wished at that wishing well, you know, every Saturday. He's thrown a quarter in there every Saturday, wishing that his mom would come back from buying that pack of cigarettes at 7-Eleven.
Yeah, I don't know. And then he just dives face first into the pond to, like, collect more.
He starts scooping them up, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, they're talking about the different people on the different coins to show you how long people have been wishing in this impractical fountain.
Yeah, the fountain also made no sense, because later on, Troy's up at the bottom, he's talking about, he makes his wish that he's going to make it with the Andy, and then he's like, it just, the hole doesn't seem like it can fit a person.
Yeah.
Based on what you see when he's there.
I felt that way about the grate when they're in the basement going in the grate, where it's just like, how's Chunk going to get down that hole anyway?
Yeah.
Because that grate, you know, and later on Sloth, you actually see him half in that hole, and it's like, oh, it did not look like it was going to fit. But yeah, like, when they bring up the bucket at one point, yeah, it looks like that bucket barely fits up the wishing well.
Yeah.
It's this tiny little hole that opens into, like, the biggest cavern ever. But yeah, so we've got them in the bottom of the well, and then we've got Troy coming back making his wish, yeah. And this is when we've got the...
Mikey gives like a rousing speech to like that they need to keep on going because they've no one's ever made it this far, and Goonies never say die. And then Andy has her line where she's like, "Oh, I'm not a Goonie."
Yeah.
But then Troy labels her as one.
See, there was actually and when she says that I'm not even a Goonie, Mikey doesn't even say anything like, "Ah, you're a Goonie now,"
yeah,
or anything like that. He just, yeah. But, like, he agrees with her. Yeah, okay, you're not a Goonie. You know, instead of, no, you've come this far, you're one of us. It's, you know, okay, no, yeah, you're right, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, you're just here. There was a moment here where we did go back to what's happening with Chunk, and he's eating more corpse cream, because he's given them everything he wants, plus the medallion. Why did Chunk have the medallion? Why did you entrust Chunk with the medallion? I don't understand why Mikey didn't just hold on to everything. You know, yeah. Mikey and Brand are the most reliable and responsible of the two. The Walsh family has it going on, but yet you entrust things like the medallion to Chunk and, you know, go save our lives, Chunk, go call the police. But yeah, so we have the Goonies Never Say Die speech, and we've got Troy... You know, see, guys, wishes do come true is his comment about the fact that Andy is in the bottom of the well. We go back to the Fratellis. The Fratellis, we've got Mom pulling a gun on her son. we've got Sloth and Chunk trying to escape. I have, how are we going to fit down in the hole? Like, I'm wondering how the Fratellis and so, it's our time. It's our time down here is where we're at. And that whole speech, actually, that was one of the moments that was directed by Steven Spielberg in this moment, or in this movie. And what he chose to do was, originally, it was supposed to be Mikey at the top, talking down to everyone. And Steven Spielberg came in and said, no, I want him looking up. And it really is a very nice moment. You know, it's one of those moments that pays off because it's him looking up and pleading. Mm-hmm.
Were there any standouts? I used to like this one, Peace Theaters.
Oh, boy. You know, I've had such a fun time doing the editing on the I Used to Like This One, Peace Theaters, because I've been adding sound effects and stuff. My favorite had to have been, just from the editing point of view, would have had to been Rush Hour.
Yeah.
Because I had so much fun by trying to tell a whole story with the door opening and closing and background noise in that one. I had fun with that.
I really liked the Austin Powers one. I don't want to give Chris two for two, but his Dr. Evil is just so perfect that it was awesome.
Yeah. And I definitely enjoyed Three Amigos, where you and I had trouble figuring out which accent to use so that we weren't racists.
I should throw Three Amigos a bone for, like, standout movies. I forgot about that one. That one was a movie I'd never watched as well that really is one I would definitely watch again. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, Trading Places, that was another one that hit low for me, though.
Yeah.
I was expecting with Trading Places and Blazing Saddles to like them so much more.
Yeah, I thought I was going to like Trading Places and Coming to America a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
UHF, that movie was like was mind boggling to me. I still don't even really know what to think about it.
But you may have softened on that one since as well.
I feel like UHF is one of those movies that is like, you can't think too much about it. You just have to be like, it's Weird Al, and, you know, just go have fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the hardest thing about this podcast is I like movies, so I'm generally not super critical of any movie I see. Like, generally. Like, I'm usually like, oh, these people got a story made, and that's cool.
Yeah.
So it's like a movie has to be pretty bad for me to hate it. So it's hard because sometimes it's like a lot of these movies, they're not what you would call high art. So it's hard to be like too critical of them.
Yeah, but I think if you get into the movies that are way too high art, then yeah, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to either rip something to shreds or question a bunch of things. I don't think I want to sit there and watch a bunch of movies like The Godfather and stuff like that. Sure. I love those movies, but it's not what I want to talk about.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, and then this is where Troy, his two buddies, are heaving on the bucket to pull it up, and it's just Andy's sweater, and it's, you know, you guys didn't realize there wasn't a body in that, or a person in that bucket as you were heaving it up.
Like, I don't understand this. Feel her jump out, because she was standing in it at one point.
Yeah. But somehow she manages to pull the old switcheroo and just send Troy's sweater back up to him. And, yeah, Andy, you goonie! And, you know, over the top, he goes from, like, very misogynistic and very... he was kind of rapey there for... That's probably the best way to put it. He was telling a bit of a rapey story. I mean, maybe it was just boys being boys and talking to his bros and everything like that. But then he turns into super cheesy Troy again, super over the top. You know, this guy belongs in like a ski school type movie or something like that.
I felt like that. I don't know if there's one specific scene I can think of that I could have cut. I would have picked that one just because I feel like the delivery of that line is so poor and it makes no sense.
Yeah,
like I feel like the Goonies only know what Goonies mean.
Yeah,
like I don't feel like he would have any reference to like. Call anybody a Goonie,
yeah,
because I don't see Goonie as being like a derogatory
unless this was an insult in the 80s that I clearly do not remember,
but... Well, what I read is that the name Goonie is based off like the area that they live in. It's called like the Goondocks or something, and so that's where Goonie comes from.
Sure,
but
I don't know anything about that, but that's still, yeah, it's, and if that's the case, then, you know, maybe it does all have to do with class or something like that. You know, he's the country club guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, his dad is just a hardworking stiff down at the Goondocks.
Yeah.
And so just anyone that's that lower class is a Goonie.
Yeah.
Who knows? And so that's Andy being rebellious and leaving high society and becoming a Goonie.
Yeah.
Even though I'd say Steph has been a Goonie the whole time. She's just been riding Andy's coattails.
Yeah.
I don't like Steph. She was annoying to me. So now Sloth and Chunk finally meet. We've got the Chunk tied up in the basement, and he tosses his baby Ruth over to Sloth. And that apparently makes you best friends to the point that this adult that you just meet is kissing you on the lips to thank you once he pulls the chains out of the wall. And so that was a little awkward to me, but not the most awkward Sloth and Chunkbo. You're talking about the hug at the end. Is that what you're laughing at?
No? I'm just laughing at all the, like, just the heartfelt, like, I love you. They're just like literally by the end of the movie, they're in love, brotherly love, but like still, it's like an intense love to have developed over what I can only imagine is max 8 hours.
Pretty much. Well, yeah, it's daylight when they go in. It's nighttime when he calls the police, and then it's daylight when they're found by the police at the end. So we've got, of course, Sloth wearing his Oakland Raiders t-shirt. This is where you see it for the first time. I did write down at one point, Baby Ruth, how much did they pay for this? And I pulled out my Google machine immediately because I couldn't wait till the end to hear the answer. $100,000 was what Nabisco paid for their product placement of Baby Ruth. And so I have to assume that... Baby Ruth and the ice cream companies, I don't remember what it is, but and Wonder Bread and Nike and Domino's Pizza, you know, you'd have to assume that they each paid at least $100,000 for their product placement. So for a movie that had a budget of $19 million, you know, you've probably done enough. And there's the Jeep that they drive as well, the Fratellis drive. So, yeah, I mean, you probably paid for at least one of those $19 million with all the product. I don't think I'm even catching them all. I know that Data is wearing a Jansport backpack. But so we've now got BFFs, Chunk and Sloth. And then we've got the Fratellis down in the caves, and they're setting off the booby traps that Data left behind, which are, you know, the little firecrackers or whatever, the little popping, I don't even know what they are, but yeah, nice booby traps, Data.
It's also very reminiscent of, well, I mean, it's not reminiscent, but it kind of, like, reminds you of Lilith's later to come in Home Alone, like, at the end.
Yeah, you might as well have just, like, set up micro machines in the on the ground there. You know, marbles, whoa, swinging paint cans.
Later on when he uses the slick shoes.
that's one of the Nike product placements right there that I definitely noticed. Yeah, and so this is where we now almost fall in the hole and kill Data, but finally one of his gadgets works properly, and those fake teeth just come flying out of his belt and hold him up somehow, and save him from certain death. But when you're watching it, he's falling forever.
Yeah,
you know, like, you know, they're not slowing it down. They're not doing it in slow motion. But they're doing it long enough that you can see every action that's being taken of his teeth saving him. You know, it makes you wonder, how far did he actually fall? And then it's like, it's only like, you know, actually like a 20-foot hole or something like that. But yeah, everyone gets down the hole eventually. This is where one of the Easter egg that you were talking about earlier, we cut back to Chunk calling the cops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the cop is saying, oh, yeah, is this like those creatures in the... if you get water on them, they multiply. You know, and that's our shout-out to Chris Columbus wrote Gremlins. That's our Gremlins Easter egg right there. Apparently, it's a story that came out of Chunk's mouth originally.
So, Colin, over the last 52 episodes, over the last year, we've had some segments come and go. We thought some of them were great ideas at the time, and they turned out not to be that good. But one that we discovered and has become like a personal favorite of yours and mine, we don't do it a lot because we don't want to overuse it. Plus, not all movies lend to this, but one of our favorite segments has become, I used to like this One Piece Theater.
Yeah, RIP to what did we call that show and tell segment we used to do back?
Show and tell. Yeah, and yeah. Bit Player Spotlight, and where are they now?
Where are they now?
Yeah, but yeah, I used to like this One Piece Theater. Colin, I have sent you a scene from the Goonies because we didn't get a chance to do any of this with the Goonies. Now there aren't a lot of scenes that I could find that, you know, it's just two people talking. I was tempted to pull out the big Sean Astin speech from the bottom of the well, or the you know, mouths, you know, this wish right here, this is my wish. I was tempted, but this is a fun little scene. I've chosen the scene with Chunk and the sheriff. So thanks. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be Chunk or do you want to be the sheriff?
I noticed that Sloth is also in this scene.
Yeah, for one line.
Okay, I'll double Chunk and Sloth.
Okay.
All right. I need to pantomime that I'm actually on the phone. hello? Is this the sheriff's office? I want to report a murder.
Wait a minute. Just hold on there. Is that you again, Lawrence?
Sheriff, look. This time I'm telling you the truth. I'm locked inside the Fratelli's basement with this guy. Rocky Road!
Yeah, sure. I bet it was just like the last time when those Iranian terrorists took over all the Sizzler steakhouses in the city.
Sloth! Where are you going? Sloth! Come back here! Sloth!
Just like that last prank about all those furry little creatures that multiply when you throw water on them. Lawrence? Yes! I used to like this One Piece Theater.
All And then we've got Rube Goldberg machine number 3 with the bronze key that Mikey puts in the wall and turns and then gets trapped in the wall. And we've got the mini Raiders of the Lost Ark bowling ball coming down. And again, I ask, why do you guys keep touching things? Yeah. Stop touching things. And then he finally gets to pee for real. So we've got the girls' room, the boys' room, and the men's room.
The men's room.
And then everyone goes in the men's room anyway. So yeah. It's like, what was the point of that joke? And then we cut back to Chunk and Sloth, and the pipes are still going nuts that they had been banging on earlier to get everyone's attention. Yeah, and then we've got the sound gag of Chunk pushing all the pipes up and cars crashing and Chunk getting a look on his face of, whoops. Actually, this might have even been one of the shits. He might have even said, oh shit, at this point. And then we've got the creepy makeout between between Mikey and Andy in the shadows. And we've got Steph standing there with a lantern. Like, she might as well just be, like, slow stroke into it. Like, she's got this really creepy look on her face as she watches her friend make out with this younger child. You know, steers him out of the cave, and she has the big laugh on Andy because she knows what actually happened. You know, that seems a little risque. Then we've got the bad guys walking through the caves, and we've got, like, classic Bumbling Crook music happening. You know, like, as they're going through the caves, you know, it's like, it might as well be, like, Benny Hill or something. You know, yeah, we've got Bumbling Crook music, and so, yeah, we're so inconsistent with the evilness of these people. Yeah, and so the Goonies are heading on, and we've got the creepy skull cave reveal, all these interesting sets that people are just running through, basically. And then they have to cross the bridge, and that's when Data pulls out his slick shoes, and no one can get across the bridge because, you know, this is when we have to turn into the Wet Bandits again, and we get, you know, people getting hit in the balls and stuff like that because that's
well, Data has two moments because they have the slick shoes, and then while they're, like, up there fiddling with the piano, he has, like, the punch, the glove punch that comes out of his jacket.
what kind of power is actually behind that glove? I mean, you know, oh no, it's like you threw a Nerf ball at me, you know?
the funny thing about that is that when it first, when he first uses it against Jake, it, like, knocks Jake clean out. But later on, when they're on the ship, and they're, like, Mama Fratelli has him at gunpoint, it, like, comes out again and hits Data square in the face, yeah. And he just, like, he just, like, takes it and then pushes it back down.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, yeah, we've got our Nike product placement, because, of course, Data wears Nikes, and it was at this point that this was the most obvious Nike product placement that I started realizing that everybody else's shoes are Nike, or at least all the kids. Yeah, and so, yeah, we've got our first couple balls jokes. We've got a scary skeleton on the bone organ. Kids movie. And Andy has the line of, she's got to find middle C. And all I can think is, good luck. How many pianos do you have that are curved and made out of bone? And I'm impressed that she was able to find any notes at all, any of those chords at all. And then we've got the floor falling away because she keeps hitting wrong notes. And I don't even understand how this floor was standing in the first place.
Yeah, I don't. It never shows anything being released.
Yeah, when they show it from the bottom, it's like you don't see any support structures at all for any of these rocks, but yet they just managed to... I had the same problem with Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade when he's trying to spell Jesus in Hebrew or whatever it is, and he steps on the J, and it's like, what is actually supporting anything under there, right? Like, so yeah, we've got the floor falling away, absolutely terrifying, but a bit of a dated effect. Oh, and I actually wrote something down about that boxing glove, is because now we're getting into goofiness. When he hits him with the boxing glove, it makes, like, a really cartoon sound effect as well. Like a boing-oing-oing or something like that, yeah. And then we've got the Fratellis throwing the gun to his other brother, and it hits him in the crotch, so we've got another dick joke. And then Andy manages to play all the right chords. They get through the drawbridge. They dive down the conveniently smooth water slide with really scary spikes out of the ceiling, but very, very smooth water slide. And yes, more shits as they're coming off the slide.
Well, Colin, I think we've mentioned a few times now the guests that we've had on the show, but I feel like it's important for us to at least give one more shout out and a thank you to the people that have appeared on our shows. And so, just as a reminder to everyone, we have special guest Chris Wells, my son. We have Kingsley Lung. We have David Sun, our Mortal Kombat expert. If you want to challenge him at a game of Mortal Kombat, look for his handle, JB Fletcher. We have Martin Galba, who was the inspiration for our podcast and has a book coming out in the next month or so. Look for a book called Zonks and the Gatekeepers. He's now a novelist. That's awesome for him. We have Tyler Warawa. Thank you, Tyler. We have Jordan Ward. Check out his stuff at goodimprov.com. Maren Richardson, look for her on Instagram under Maren Richardson Music. Joshua Blum, look for his podcast, the 13th Hour Podcast. We have Carly Holm, our resident John Hughes expert. We have Francie Goodwin Davies, Joel Sims, and Jack Bazook. We have Brady Hester, look for his show Braddog Media, anywhere that you find your podcasts. We of course also have our buddy Will Brisbane, whose movie, Paw Patrol the Movie, is in theaters now. You can follow him at Will Brisbane on Twitter or Will.Brisbane on Instagram. We have stand-up comic Tim Kubasik. You can find him at Nervous Comic on Instagram and Twitter. Of course, our friend Frank Driscoll. Look for his podcast, Frankfully Honest, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We have Chris Wolf and Aaron Brewster, hosts of the unfortunately now defunct Sports Rundown podcast. And of course, our most recent guests are comic book experts Brad and Lisa Gullickson from the CBCC podcast, the Comic Book Couples Counseling podcast. Go give them a listen. They were a lot of fun. Absolutely love them. And of course, a couple people that weren't guests, but they are mentioned in our show notes. If you've never read our show notes, I do want to say a very special thank you as well to Lyndon Carter for our music. Look for his band Carter and the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Great band, check them out. As well, our website designer, David Sun. David gets another shout out. And special thanks to Tracy Sharamita, Lyndon Carter, Chris Wells, and Graham Wells for their contributions behind the scenes to this show. They were instrumental in helping us get up and running. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We couldn't have done this year without any of you people. Thank you for coming on this journey with us.
And then we've got the big reveal of the pirate ship. The kids for this movie were actually not allowed to see the pirate ship before the day of filming. That's why the shot starts with them all with their backs to the ship and then them turning around. Richard Donner wanted authentic reactions. So except for Corey Feldman, who managed to sneak a peek of it ahead of time, those are all authentic, you know, reactions to this set. Richard Donner did not want them to see the pirate ship. And then we get on the ship and we've got more crazy amounts of skeletons for a kids movie.
I'm just thinking, like, it's just occurring to me right now, like, the logic of this ship being in this cove, but there's a treasure map for it.
Yeah.
So, like, did One-Eyed Willie take the map from, because this ship is, like, locked in, like,
Yeah.
I don't even understand, we'll talk about that, but anyways. So he would have had to go all the way back through all this, like, presumably leave the map somewhere.
He would have had to, like,
then come through everything, reset, and essentially lock himself in the ship where he is then, like, you know how, like, most treasure maps, it's, like, it's leading to, like, buried treasure, so it's, like, they've left it there so that they can leave and come back, but in this instance, it's, like, the map is to the ship.
Well, and how did Chester Copperpot get as far as he could without the map? Because he died in the caves, which means that the map that was framed...
Yeah, That is a good point as well. Like, how did he, cause he somehow figured out where it was and went to get there.
Yeah.
But he didn't take the map with him because he died. But nobody found him and found the map, well, otherwise presumably they would have brought his body back.
He would have needed all the medallions and the keys in order to unlock everything anyway. Mm-hmm. And the map had the notes on it that had to be played on. Oh my god. Wow. That's it. You've poked the biggest hole in it that makes no sense whatsoever. Outstanding. Well, see, and I had already thought, and I we're going to get to that part, but when they're on the ship, there's the one trap that's set off by the gold in front of him. So, like, One-Eyed Willie just sat there and waited for himself to die, and, like, his last task before he died of hunger, I guess?
Yeah, like, he just sat with his gold and died.
Yeah, just sat there, like, maybe he had scurvy, because he's, you know... But he just sat there and died with his gold, but, like, his last task was to, like, set up this trap so that anyone that came looking for it... wow. I don't know. Okay, well, we're on the pirate ship. We've got Rube Goldberg machine number... What are we up to? Four now. and this is the one that... Andy touches, and, you know, the sand pours out, and the top splits open, and before you can even read the words that are printed on that, someone punches through that to see what's above it, you know, instead of stopping to read, like, you know, maybe it says, haha, if you punch this, you're gonna set off,
yeah,
you're gonna set off the next explosion, or, I don't know, but yeah, so, we're now in, Mikey climbs up to the top, and we're in One-Eyed Willie's secret room. So, like, not only has he set up this trap, he's, like, locked himself into a secret room.
Even. Yeah.
Like, the hole that was boarded up, was that his only way into the secret room? And so his dying task was to, like, nail...
It's, yeah. It's also, like, Mikey has this, like, weird, like, because he then goes on to have, like... this long monologue where he's talking to Willie and about he has this like affection for Willie that I don't really understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand where it came from or how it even like resonates with his story of feeling like alone and like he's losing everything and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then he's got the great line of lifting up the eye patch and that's why they call you One-Eyed Willie. And it's like, you know, I wasn't expecting a filled in eye socket. I guess the guy with the eye patch in the shower isn't the only one that was missing an eye in this movie. But like, I just don't understand. Like, usually it was an odd choice to have a skeleton that literally only had one eye hole. But okay. But yeah, that's why they call you One-Eyed Willie. No, the eye patch wasn't enough of a clue for you, Mikey. But Mikey tells everyone to stay downstairs. But of course, everyone is standing there and they get to listen to his big heartfelt monologue that you just talked about. And with his heartfelt emotion, he has the moment of, just don't touch that gold. That gold is Willie's.
And even that didn't make any sense. Like, I don't understand what that links. This is like... Maybe I'm nitpick, but it's like a story. No, it's like a story thing. There's so much. I don't know. Well, when I first watched the movie, I thought it's a great movie and everything. And I kept thinking because I watched it with my wife, and she's like, "Oh, do you think like kids today would still like this movie? Would it still resonate?" And I thought, yeah, like it's different because kids don't grow up this way anymore. Like kids don't just go. Play outside that much and they have no cell phones and no electronics and all this stuff and like but at the same time I just felt watching it as like the story is so good that I feel like that'll just carry you through but the more I think about the story and just how they constantly like do things that I feel like in normal situations would meant to be called back to something else or like foreshadowed or like something but they just are saying things and But then I also remember, I'm like, these are kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these are...
and with the amount of shits in the movie, though, I don't know if I want to show it to my kids these days. Because it's a family movie, and it's all these terrifying... Like, I were we tougher in the 80s or something like that? Like, because I will shelter my kids a lot more from a movie like this because, yeah. You know, I can see stuff that even at my age now is legitimately terrifying. And I remember how scary it was for me when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so we've got this room full of skeletons, and then we've got, now all the Fratellis show up again. They've managed to make it to the boat.
With guns and swords.
With guns and swords. and so they tell the kids to come outside and empty their pockets, because, you know, like, this room full of gold and everything like that. No, they need what the kids have in their pockets.
I remember you had said that there were a couple of comic books that you downloaded for our episodes, like Rocketeer, and you hadn't gotten around to it yet. How's the Rocketeer comic book?
I think it was like the one they're kind of like remakes of the original ones, but done with current artists. I thought I really enjoyed them. I liked the one like I really thought was strange again was The Mask.
Yeah.
Like I read a few issues of The Mask, and just it's really interesting how different that is from the movie. The Rocketeer is just more, he's definitely more heroic in the comic books than he comes off in the movie. But that might just be because the movie is clearly an origin story.
Yeah.
But it definitely made me wish that they would have been able to continue on with the Rocketeer or even reboot it and go forward with that.
But now we get into some very over the top. Well, actually, no, we've got the one moment where we've got two girls who have been gathering up jewels and been draping necklaces around each other. The Fratellis come in and say, "Get out here." And the girls are terrified and they start walking, and then they see each other, and then they go, "Oh, I like your," and then they keep going, you know, because, you know, women be shopping. Is that joke, of course. You know, you have to have something like that with the two teenage girls, that instead of this terrifying situation, you have to have the moment where they're taken out of it because they think the other is wearing pretty jewels. But then we get into, like, the super melodramatic, super klutzy Fratellis. You know, people tripping and getting kicked in the nuts walk the plank. Like, really?
And it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
Like, she walks the plank, jumps into the water, and is fine. Like, swim away to safety.
It seems like the water was wading height, right? They didn't actually have to swim to the boat. They were able to touch the ground, as far as I can tell. And so, I mean, maybe they'd break an ankle if they jumped in, but the point of walking the plank as a pirate was you were out in the middle of the ocean. You were gonna die.
Yeah.
You weren't going to be able to tread water long enough to survive. But, I mean, I guess then after Andy has to walk the plank, Bran jumps in after her, and he actually does have to pull her above the surface. So I guess around the boat it must have been deeper. But there really are parts in that.
Yeah,
like when they first come out of the conveniently smooth slides, they are all touching the water or the ground at that point. So
I thought it was funny that when Data uses his utility belt suction cuff, there's also a problem with the suction cuff that, like, it's just not physics that the suction of the cup, that tiny little cup, could pull a human child towards it.
You have to bring science into it. Science!
And I mean, it was bad enough when it was on the garbage can. Maybe the garbage can I could buy.
Can was on wheels, it was on, like, a wheel thing. So it was on a little dolly of some sort.
But the gun, I'm even less so. Like, her hand doesn't even move. She just holds it there, and it pulls him towards her.
Yeah.
But I also thought it was funny when he has his tooth grabber thing, like, go on to
another balls. Not joke, another
that
another
his brother's first their first reaction is to try to use the swords to pry them off his nuts.
because that's logical, and that's where we get into the bumbling Fratellis for sure at this point. And I also add at this point, I have written down here, at what point did Steph stop being Velma from Scooby-Doo? Because I realize, how long is it that she's actually been able to see things properly? She's no longer squinting. Like, she aims, like, a perfectly placed fake punch on Anne Ramsey at one point, you know, and, like, she's out there fighting just fine. And, you know, at what point did the actress herself stop forgetting that she was supposed to be wearing glasses? Yeah. But then we've got the big Goonies line that everybody knows. Hey, you guys! And in swing Chunk and Sloth and their bromance. And yeah, like we mentioned earlier, this is where Chunk rips off his Raiders t-shirt and the Superman shirt is underneath. And we've got the Richard Donner throwback by having the Superman theme for a split second. And yeah, and so there's still mayhem and bedlam going on the boat. We've got the classic pirate trope of Sloth sliding down the sail by holding a knife, and from a distance you can tell that is just a stuffed animal on the back of Sloth. It's definitely not Chunk, it's just a dummy. So we've got all this chaos going on, and then this is where Andy is thrown into the water and Bran jumps in after her and you know, as kids do, leaves her tied up while he kisses her, and she has the line of what happened to your braces? And that's when Bran realizes that his brother, the only person with braces in the group, must have made out with his now girlfriend or whatever. So we've got Sloth swinging out to save the people that are on the end of the... I forget who it is at this point. It might be Steph and Mouth. Whoever's tied up on the plank at this point, Sloth swings out and grabs them. Another point where those are definitely not real people that are that he's carrying around. Yeah, and then we've got Rube Goldberg makes one more appearance, and we've got contraption number 5, which is the one that sets up that they set off that starts the cave a crumbling.
Yeah, which
I don't even know what Willie had.
There's so many things about, like, it sets off this chain of events that all of a sudden pulls up the anchor, sets the sails.
Yep.
Which, sure. Maybe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
What I don't get is it also sets off the cannons to shoot things through the wall to, like, knock out this piece of the wall so that the ship can...
Maybe he set it up because he was hoping he would be the last one to survive. And, I mean, I don't understand. I still don't understand why he hid in this cave at all to begin with. But, you know, he doesn't need anyone to, like, jib the sail or rig the starboard or I don't know sailing terms. But, you know, like, you know, running a ship, it takes a large crew. So if you're alone, you want to be able to, like, pull one rope and all of a sudden all the cannons and everything go off. Perfect sense to me.
They need to do a Goonies prequel that's just like the story of One-Eyed Willy.
I have heard that there is a Goonies 2 in the works, and so it would have the original Goonies as parents, I think.
Yeah.
Is the deal. Yeah, that's one of those ones that's kind of trapped in pre-production or something. And then we've got the other terrible special effects as well, which is the rocks falling into the water. It's very clear that the rocks are added post-production and that the splashes in the water are just squibs that are blowing splashes up. And then this is the other problematic Sloth Chunk moment is, you know, they get to the hole, they have the dynamite, they blow the hole in the side of the cave, they're escaping through the hole, Sloth has to lift up the rock and hold it, they all crawl through his legs, and Chunk is the last to go, so as Chunk's going through, he, like, smacks Chunk on the ass to get his attention. Okay, that's not the problem, he was just trying to get his attention. But then when Chunk sticks his head back in, he hugs him right to his crotch. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, Richard Donner, in your dailies, didn't you think that maybe you should figure out a different way to pull that hug off? Because you are holding a child's face right to that man's crotch.
It was a more innocent time.
I suppose so. And then somehow they just make it onto a beach. The cops on the quads find them. They find the goobers, as they're called. One of those is actually Richard Donner.
Yeah.
The other is one of the assistant directors, I believe, one of the first ADs or something.
So, Colin, one thing that has definitely blown my mind over the last 52 episodes, over the last year, is the fact that just the reach that something like this has, it just absolutely blows my mind. Now, if you're not following us on social media, what are you doing? You should go over to Instagram, at I used to like this one, or on our Twitter, or just go to our website and take the links from there. But if you're not following us on our social media, you may not have noticed that we have been downloaded in 28 countries. That just blows my mind, Colin. What a time.
I mean, how many countries are there in the world? 157?
Yeah.
Is that right? How many countries are there in the world? 193.
Okay.
So 28, that's almost, we're like just over 10%.
10% of the world dominated?
Yeah.
And one thing that people that don't have podcasts of their own might not realize, we can actually look at analytics and find out where you guys are from. So, a special shout out to, we've got one listener in France that has been with us from the very beginning, that has downloaded every episode, is always one of the first ones to download. So merci beaucoup to the person in France that downloads, but to all the people all over the world that download our show, thank you so much. From Brazil to Australia to Taiwan and Japan to Germany and Sweden and where else has it been? It's been Qatar and Turkey and just all over the world. Thank you so much. It blows my mind, though, just the power of the internet and the power of all that sort of stuff.
And then they take them up, and all the parents have now shown up to pick up their kids. A lot of these parents are actually the real parents of the actors. Those are Data's real parents. Those are Andy's real parents. With Chunk, that's his grandma and his dad, I think. And then we have the Domino's box that he uses as a shield at one point. And when the parents show up, I have the note of, could the parents be any more obvious? Because they show up and it's kind of like, okay, so you've got the fat parents with the Hawaiian shirts. I wonder who they belong to. You've got the
Asian parents.
Well, the Asian parents, the exact course, same clothing. Yeah, and yeah, you've the got gadgets. The squirrely parents. Of course, those are Steph's. Okay. I guess if you're a product of your environment, that really proves it right there. And then we have one of the most mind-boggling lines of the entire movie. I had to turn on subtitles and write this down. Andy gives Mikey a kiss, and then she says to him, quote,
I hate this line.
"Keep kissing girls the way you do. The parts of you that don't work so good, they're going to catch up to the ones that do." What?
I know. What does that mean? Ugh.
And I watched this with commentary, and the actress that plays Andy actually, turned to Richard Donner and said, what does that line mean? And she had no idea either. So I'm glad that I wrote that down because it made no sense to me either. And yeah, this is the part where Mikey just decides he's no longer asthmatic. I guess if you want to be a man and go about kissing girls, you just got to chuck that over your shoulder.
I like that. I also like, because right after that, Andy and Bran start kissing, and their mom has a line where she's like the dad, like Mr. Marsh or whatever, or Walsh. Mr. Walsh goes to, he's going to go break it up, and then their mom is just like, let her mother worry about that.
Are they absentee parents? Where, who knows? But they showed up for their kids at least. And then there's a line where, Data and his dad are talking to each other in Cantonese. And there's a part where another brilliant use of subtitles where
they keep that one part in Asian
subtitles. Yeah, they pick up what happens is Sloth picks up Chunk, I think, or he picks someone up.
One of the police officers.
Oh yeah, right, that's right, yeah, because they want to arrest Sloth. but they're telling them that Sloth's a good guy. So Sloth picks up one of the police officers, and so Data says, and it's subtitled, "Wow," and then just a bunch of Cantonese characters. And apparently the actual translation to that Cantonese is just something like, he's a really strong guy or something like that. But they give you the old psych out, because they throw it in there, and I guess you're supposed to think that he's like cursing or something like that in that moment. Yeah, and then Chunk loves Sloth. I love you too, buddy. Is he a Disney princess? He fell in love in one day with Sloth.
And do his parents know that he's living with you?
By the way, Mom, I will say again that I was really impressed with the Sloth makeup. Apparently, with John Matuszak, he had to actually plan his blinking so that the mechanical eye in his makeup, so that they can make it blink at the same time. And you know, we've got the wiggly ears and everything like that. So I was impressed with the Sloth makeup, but yeah, it just, here, mom, dad, see this guy with the weird mangled face? Yeah.
They also make it sound like,
you can live with us.
Yeah, it's just, that's one of those situations where it's strange to think about, like, what the end game is. Like, where it goes, like, what happens the next day in that household, because it's just, Sloth appears to be, like, 40 years old.
Yeah.
and has been chained up somewhere for most of his life, has very little social skills.
Well, and apparently, like, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall is a trigger for him.
Yeah.
So you gotta look out that you're not using those words of a nursery rhyme or, you know, a nursery song or... So yeah, it's, what kind of psychological damage does this weird guy, the overpowering strength guy, have? But then we've got Rosita saves the day
with the jewels.
Yeah, she finds the jewels in the marble thing. Oh yeah, I forgot about this. So you know, those are enough to save the house. Or you know, instead, when they see the ship floating by, why doesn't someone send a boat out to the ship?
I did not understand the logic.
Yeah.
They're all just sitting on the bank watching the ship go into the distance. I'm like, you're a museum curator. That's an exhibit floating away.
Mikey just says, nope, that belongs to One-Eyed Willie, I guess. Yeah, he just, you know, because Mikey has this weird, weird moral compass of things. Yeah, and one of those shots is another really terrible shot.
Well, there we go. Part 3 down. But, you know, I'm sure we were rejuvenated now from our vacation time off that we've had.
Yes, we're ready to go. Ready to get back at it.
And if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell your friends. Share our posts, because word of mouth is really important to a podcast trying to find an audience. We're not Conan O'Brien. We've taken a couple weeks off on our vacation and haven't bashed him for a while. But come on, he is our rival, and we need to rise up and crush Conan O'Brien's podcast. Or if you want to go above and beyond and help us, just go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say in those reviews, but 5 stars and a review, they just help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed, especially somewhere like Apple Podcasts.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes. This week, I'm going to suggest you go back and listen to... You know what? I'm going to suggest that you, if you're an avid listener, you've listened through all our Goonies retrospective, now's the time to go back and listen to the first episode of I Used to Like This One and compare this thing to what we actually released. Maybe that one was better. We don't know. Maybe let us know if we should have just released this first episode as our first episode, or if we were right to go back and re-record it. You can also find links to all of our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there, check out our memes, give us some comments, give us some likes, give us some shares. Tell your friends. If you want to drop us a line, you can reach us by email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show, just like our executive producer, Joshua Blum, who got a shout out just now on this show because he did what you should do. Go over to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and become a supporter of the show.
Josh Blum also did what Conan O'Brien could never do, and that is be a guest on this show, not once, not twice, but thrice. Just kidding, Conan, we love you, so if you want to be on this show, please reach out to us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening.
And you don't want to miss next week, because we have our first annual Onesie Award show coming your way. But for now, we have to wrap it up
on I Used to Like This One.